is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Martin Big says some of the smaller countries are concerned about losing tariff revenue, which makes up a huge part of their overall fiscal revenue.
That's Vicky Stark reporting on the Africa trade deal, which goes into effect Friday. Details coming up. Also, Ugandan presidential candidate Bobby Wine has been arrested. And a powerful tropical storm has made landfall near the Mozambique city of Beira. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Tomorrow is New Year's Eve, and like billions of people around the world, South Africans want to party. In a country with high levels of alcohol use and abuse, celebration often revolves around liquor. But as a second wave of COVID-19 crashed across South Africa, the government has introduced curfews and banned booze and large gatherings, and many are angry and disappointed. Darren Taylor has more.
Nurses and doctors who've worked casualty wards in South Africa on New Year's Eve will tell you how much pain and destruction the occasion usually wreaks. Gunshot and stab wounds, bodies mangled in car accidents and violent assaults. Most injuries are alcohol-related. The government says it won't allow this to happen this year because hospital beds are needed for those seriously ill with COVID-19.
We have to also consider the healthcare system and the strain that the abuse of alcohol is putting on that. We're not insensitive to that.
Patricia Pillay is CEO of South Africa's Beer Association.
But I think the other side of this that we need to really look at with government is the fact that a ban does not solve any problems at all that we're facing as a country. All this does is push the market to the illicit market, which already was sitting at...
It's true that the networks of illegal sellers that flourished when trade in liquor was outlawed during South Africa's first hard lockdown in March have been reactivated. But the alcohol they're selling is simply too expensive for the vast majority of citizens. Hospitals thus reported huge decreases in trauma cases during the first liquor ban. That, says the government, is proof that stopping the formal alcohol trade achieves the objective of reserving hospital beds for COVID-19 patients. In any case, says Police Minister Becky Cele, his officers will crush the black market.
There are people that are causing some economic sabotage when it comes to alcohol. Our eyes are very much open on that. We are going to be tough. Those that have licenses to trade on alcohol, if they break the law and they sell it illegally, those licenses must be taken and they must be sent to prison.
Thaler says the state was forced to close bars and taverns because many owners weren't enforcing safety measures such as social distancing. Pillay maintains only a few were defiant.
We've put out 1,000 patrollers over this festive season to go out and visit institutions, look at people that are breaching lockdown rules. So we really have put out a lot as industry to try and support government, but we just feel that we have not been heard.
She says the liquor sector has even offered to fund a return of soldiers to enforce lockdown regulations in problem areas, but the government hasn't responded.
The CEOs of the major manufacturers wrote to every one of their customers saying, if their liquor licenses are revoked, we will stop supply to them. But we can only do this if government lets us know where the breaches have happened in terms of whose licenses have been revoked. We can only support where we get data and where we get information.
The state responds that its priority is to save lives, and it hasn't got the time to consult with each and every economic sector about its decisions during the pandemic. Trele says there's a time for talk and a time for action, and he's told his officers to crack down on anyone who disobeys the booze ban.
No transportation of alcohol, which means wherever alcohol is now, stays there. No breaking, no can of any form of alcohol in your boot, no taking alcohol from next door to next door. So you will only...
In South Africa, the long, hot summer just got a whole lot drier. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Ugandan presidential candidate Robert Chagulani, known as Bobby Wine, has been arrested today along with much of his campaign team. Wine and witnesses posted on Twitter that he had been arrested while campaigning in Kalangala in central Uganda. A spokesperson for Wine's party, the National Unity Platform, told Reuters that police drove Wine and his team away in trucks. He did not know where they were taken. The police have not yet commented. Wine is seen as the strongest challenger to President Yoweri Museveni in the January 14th presidential election. He and his supporters have faced several police crackdowns this year, and police routinely break up his campaign's events. Museveni has been in office 34 years. Critics and rights activists say the Museveni's government has become increasingly repressive against any political opposition. Still, many Ugandans support him because of the country's stability and economic growth. The long-awaited African Continental Free Trade Area is to come into effect on January 1st. Under a decision at a recent virtual meeting of the 13th extraordinary session of the Assembly of the African Union. AU Chairman and South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says the agreement will boost intra-African trade, promote foreign investment, industrialization, and create jobs. Reporter Vicky Stark spoke to the executive director of the Trade Law Center in South Africa, Trudy Hartzenberg.
Hartzenberg says there's still lots to be done.
But you know what? I think the commitment is so high, so strong, that some trade will begin. The question just is, what product will it be?
Hartzenberg is waiting for a declaration from the African Union that lists the products to be covered by the agreement. She thinks initially these will be ones that countries are not sensitive about.
The sensitive products will be the ones where they really take a long time to negotiate the tariff reductions and also the rules of origin. So there may be some products where countries say, you know what, we're happy with reducing the tariff for trade on the 1st of January. So we really are keen to see what that list is going to be.
54 African countries have signed the agreement. It's only Eritrea that hasn't. Hartzenberg says what really matters is that 34 have now ratified. The latest was Nigeria on December 5th.
We were all waiting to see Nigeria, and Nigeria ratified on the 5th. So that's a big step. So all the big economies, South Africa, Kenya, Egypt, Nigeria, have now ratified.
Hartzenberg says some of the smaller countries are concerned about losing tariff revenue, which makes up a huge part of their overall fiscal revenue.
It is a tricky situation, but we are hoping that some of the complementary initiatives, for example, Afrexim Bank has started an adjustment facility, and this is basically to help the smaller countries, particularly the least developed countries on the continent, when they do liberalize and they are losing tariff revenue and their domestic firms may be facing challenges as more imports come into their national markets. This adjustment facility, it's a loan facility, would help them to assist those companies that are battling.
Afrexim, or the African Export-Import Bank, was created in 1993.
Various countries are shareholders. It's a really interesting one because their traditional area of business is providing trade finance. And they're headquartered in Egypt, and they are coming up with some really innovative solutions.
Hartzenberg says all tariff issues will hopefully be resolved by mid-2021.
The negotiations that we hopefully will wrap up in June, July will be tariff negotiations, and sector commitment for services. In other words, those are the outstanding phase one issues.
She says phase two negotiations will then involve things like investment, intellectual property rights, competition policy, and also e-commerce. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Thousands of Sudanese attended the funeral of Baha el-Din Nouri, who was tortured to death this month by members of a paramilitary force. The Associated Press reports Nouri was snatched by unknown men while he was sitting at a coffee shop in Khartoum. No reason has been given for his arrest. 5 days later, his body appeared at a hospital morgue in the city of Omdurman. The family saw signs of apparent beating and torture and asked for an autopsy. Sudan's Minister of Culture and Information, Faisal Mohamed Saleh, said Nouri died while being interrogated by the Rapid Support Forces. The commander of the Rapid Support Forces has removed immunity for any member under suspicion to allow the prosecutor's investigation to go forward unhindered. Nouri's death has sparked outcry across the country. Thousands of Sudanese protested yesterday, chanting slogans against the paramilitary force and called for suspects to be held accountable. Sudan is making a political transition more than 18 months after the ouster of longtime ruler Omar al-Bashir. The Rapid Support Forces often supported Bashir during his 3 decades of rule. Words like carnival, shopping, joyful have been used to describe Christmas the world over, but not in Zimbabwe. The economy has been slumping for years and the COVID-19 pandemic has made the situation worse. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has more from Harare.
The days around Christmas in Zimbabwe usually are a time for Zimbabweans to travel and be with their extended families, share delicious meals, and take time off work to reflect on the year. That will not be the case this year. Dexter Fundire is a young Zimbabwean who says Christmas is happening against a backdrop of massive job and income losses.
The year has been really tough for ordinary Zimbabweans. A lot of people lost their livelihoods, lost their jobs, and it was just a tough time for everybody.
Munyara Dzidodo, the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament business and political developments, agrees most people don't feel like celebrating.
The year has been very difficult with COVID, with the economy. So it's been absolutely brutal on the average Zimbabwean, and a lot of people will be glad to just see it pass. And this Christmas will be worse than last year's because the pandemic is still raging, there's a drought, the economy is still in free fall. So the prospect for an average Zimbabwean is very, very bleak.
In addition, Zimbabwe faces soaring inflation and a collapsing job market. And like many other countries, Zimbabwe remains under COVID-19 restrictions. President Emmerson Mnangagwa said COVID-19 regulations to be observed this Christmas.
As the festive season approaches, many are preparing to travel to their rural homes for family reunions over the festive season. It is, however, important that we avoid any unnecessary travel and gatherings and that we enjoy ourselves responsibly. If, however, you must travel or gather, let us be vigilant.
He adds that all COVID-19 restrictions remain in place, so people should keep any gatherings small. During the rest of the festive season, event organizers often capitalize on the carnival mood and host large gathering events with all sorts of activities. Churches often gather congregants for all-night prayers. None of this will be happening this year, and gatherings remain restricted to a maximum of 100. The tourism sector, which has in the past had a surge of international visitors around this time, has moved to focus on the domestic market, given the steep decline in international travel worldwide. For VOA, This is Kudzai Zunamashe from Harare.
In Zimbabwe, a young food science graduate has found a way to turn his passion into a thriving business and jobs for others. Arigando gives us more on the story.
Leslie Marange, a 31-year-old food science graduate, always had a passion for food, and specifically healthy food. He says several factors started him on the entrepreneurial path when he created his company Glytime Foods in February 2018. He spotted a gap in the Zimbabwean market for healthy cereals, which foreign brands have flooded. Working with his wife, who also studied nutrition, he decided to fill that gap, taking advantage of increased global demand for health foods against the background of the rising prevalence of diseases such as high blood pressure and diabetes. Now, Glytime Foods employs 31 young people at its plant, which processes 24 tons of cereals each month. Its products include granola cereals, honey and cookies. The company has benefited from the Trade and Promotion Board ZimTrade's incubation program, which helped the company spread into the Southern Africa Development Community states courtesy of bilateral trade agreements. The director of operations at ZimTrade, Philip Piri, weighs in on what attracted his organization's interest in including Glytime in the export development program.
I think for starters, Glytime, the products that they were doing had a space in the market, international market as well. The potential to export was there. What really pushed us was that the entrepreneur himself was a very aggressive and a very strategic thinker. So we thought, look, it would augment his efforts when he would come on board and try and assist him to grow his business and also focus him on exporting into the... We took some of their samples to some of the trade shows in the region, exhibitions, before they could even travel with us to these trade events. But we also facilitated them to travel to Botswana in a B2B meeting that we had with the Botswana businesses organized by us, ZimTrade, and our counterparts, BITC.
With ZimTrade's assistance, Glytime Foods is now registered in Botswana's special economic zone and has gotten space to build a food processing factory in that country. The company also exports to Zambia and is eyeing opportunities in DRC and Mozambique. ZimTrade also says that it is helping the company to explore opportunities further north.
We also facilitated for them to send some of their samples to a mission we had in the UK, where I think the product has quite a lot of potential in terms of exporting into the EU.
Glytime boss Marange says ZimTrade's support made it easier to enter regional markets. Zimbabwe's economy has been battered for many years by problems that include drought, high youth unemployment, hyperinflation, and international sanctions. So Marange says part of the goal of his business is creating value for the communities where it operates.
We want to create value for our employees. We want to create value for our customers. We want to create value for our suppliers. We want to create value just across the value chain. And we also have a disability inclusion program in our business. We have people that do not hear, that do not talk, who are part of the team.
Other entities are beginning to take notice of Glytime's efforts to push health foods into the market. Harvest Plus, an international organization that works to support public health and nutrition by promoting grains and beans that have been fortified with nutrients, is exploring the possibility of partnering with Glytime Foods. The Zimbabwe country manager, Sakile Kudita, speaks on her organization's interest in Glytime Foods.
Our goal as Harvest Plus is to reach 1 billion people with micronutrient-enriched staples, that is the biofortified crops. And we see Glytime Foods being a key partner in us at reaching those goals. Glytime Foods is already working on a breakfast cereal that uses vitamin A maize. And in the process, the company will also be providing a market for smallholder farmers who may be producing the vitamin A-enriched maize.
Even with regional and international organizations taking an interest in health food startup Glytime, like other small, medium-sized enterprises in the country, faces challenges to get financing, especially in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. Still, Marange is hopeful he will find a way to continue to grow the business, which is a bright spot in a grim economy. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Zimbabwe.
A girls' education rights group, the Malala Fund, says most of Nigeria's out-of-school children during the pandemic are girls, and that the gap with boys is widening. Ifeoke Tang reports from Jos, Nigeria.
13-year-old Joy Pam has had to wash the plates, cook the family meals, and sweep the compound daily since the pandemic forced schools to shut down in March. Even though schools have reopened now, she still must continue with her chores at home, even though her classmates are back at school.
When I see them going to school, tears will start dropping out from my eyes. I wish my parents could get the money and pay my school fees to go back to school because I want to go back to school and study.
The Malala Fund is a non-profit education rights group that advocates for girls' education around the world. Its Nigerian representative, Crystal Ikani Musa, says Nigeria has more girls out of school than boys, especially in the north.
Before the COVID pandemic, Nigeria had 13.2 million children out of school. Over 50% of that number are girls. Once the pandemic hit, up to way more than that, about 36 million children were out of school.
Education officials such as Matthew Sule, the executive chairman of the Plateau State's Universal Basic Education Board, says girls face more obstacles in gaining access to education.
Assistance should be given to the children, particularly also the girl child. We have had radio and television broadcasts. We have produced some hard copy materials which have delivered to the children at home.
Research spearheaded by the Malala Fund's Ikani Musa indicates that during the lockdown, many girls face hurdles to being able to use government-provided distant learning options.
Girls are in rural areas. A lot of them did not have access to television or radio because they don't have electricity. There are also cultural and social norm factors where these girls are not able to have access to data. So in a typical family, the girl may have to ask a parent or her spouse to use a smartphone where she could have accessed some of these materials. And depending on if they were granted permission, they were able to access these alternative learning options.
Girls also spent more time doing household chores, according to Malala Fund champion and CEO of Connected Development, Hamzat Lawal.
We saw from data, and data we collected directly from children with consent from their parents, that a lot of girls got more hours to do house chores, while boys got plenty hours to play. So what this also means is the girls had less hour to study and prepare for school reopening.
The Universal Basic Education Act of 2004 offers free education for every Nigerian child from primary to junior secondary school. But Hamzat Lawal, the CEO of Connected Development and Malala Fund champion, says there are hidden fees that many poor families can't afford.
Our campaign is saying remove hidden fee, amend the Universal Basic Education Act, and ensure compulsorily that girls and boys, particularly girls, go to school and access free 12-year education.
The state's Universal Basic Education Board is calling on development partners to help fund education for children in rural communities. Ifeoke Etang for VOA News, Jos, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the interview.